Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and I bet you those of you listening are saying, thank goodness it's Friday. Well, with the Friday, I think we're going to be able to send you off into a weekend with a lot of positive thoughts and a lot of good feelings. If you, like so many individuals today, are feeling a bit challenged by the circumstances we're going through, hey, you don't need to be worried. We're going to be talking with Dr. Nancy Irwin about her wonderful book, called U-Turn, Changing Direction in Midlife. But you know what? You don't have to be in midlife to change direction. You can change direction at any age. Dr. Irwin, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Donna. A real pleasure to be here. And I'm so glad you said that about how change is possible at any age. Because, yeah, the book is, I'm a baby boomer, and I wrote it for baby boomers and older. But I also love it. You know, it's really an inspiration for the 20s and 30s-somethings. So they will see they can avert a midlife crisis, which I abhor that term anyway. It's nothing critical about it. But they can see that, you know, you can always make a change anytime you want.
Well, I think it is all across the age board, because I've known people in their 20s that have had to turn on a dime. I've known people in their 70s and 80s that have had to turn on the dime, and everything in between.
Absolutely.
Now, you have a quote right at the very beginning of your book I really like. It's by Henry Van Dyke. Use what talent you possess. The woods would be very silent if no bird sang except those that sang best. I really like that quote.
Oh, I know. It just makes me cry. It's so beautiful. It's so true, because there's so many people that think, oh, I can't be an actor. There's so many actors. There's so many singers. And I'm like, well, there's always room for another one.
Mm-hmm. And you never know what unique environment may evolve so that you can fit into it with whatever your particular personal magic might be. That's what talent and skill is. And it's a joy to know you can always take whatever you've acquired and expand on it, grow it into something that is entirely different. It's really quite an exciting time, I think, historically.
I think so, too, because, yeah, all of our skills are transferable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my background is, oh, please, I was an opera singer, and then I was a stand-up comic, and now I'm a psychotherapist.
What a progression. I love it. I
segue,
love it.
Don't you think?
I think so, because if they really aren't paying attention, you could sing a high C.
There you go.
And then really rock them.
Exactly.
That would be just absolutely awesome. You had a term right at the first part of your book that I just love. You called some of your clients mistake-a-phobic. And I thought, now that word is a good word. You could put that on someone and you would have their attention in a split second. What do you mean a mistake-a-phobic? Where does that come from?
A lot of people are phobic about making mistakes. They're scared to death to try anything new, to take any risk, because they're afraid they'll make a mistake. And we only learn from our mistakes.
True.
Wisdom comes from failure. Just because you fail doesn't make you a failure. Just because you make a mistake doesn't mean you are a mistake or your career was a mistake. It's a temporary obstacle. You learn from it. You grow around it. So what I tell mistake-a-phobics to do, those who are like perfectionists and really afraid of failure, I tell them to get out and deliberately do something that they know they will fail at. And that makes the pendulum swing in the other way, so they become comfortable with quote-unquote failure.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if there's something you know you suck at, like singing, go to a karaoke night and sing out as badly as you possibly can.
And drive everyone out of the room.
Exactly. It's to stretch that muscle so you give yourself permission and see that you're not going to die.
Mm-hmm.
You actually might end up laughing your head off and having a great time.
And you'll really get a laugh if you make sure you have a good supply of earplugs for everybody that's attending.
Or, you know what? You might find out you're a better singer than you thought.
Aha, there we go. That's another avenue.
You never know what's going to happen.
There, you have some fun stories in here, but there's a statement that you make that I really appreciated, and it's that intelligence and behavior have nothing to do with one another. Holy Joseph, can I relate to that statement? Let's get a little bit more illumination on that.
Well, it's true, and the goal in therapy and in life is to use your intelligence to guide your behavior. But our intelligence is only, our conscious mind, which houses our intelligence, is only about 12% of our mental capabilities. That means the rest, 88%, are unconscious, which is where all behavior comes from. There's this huge split. This explains why smart people keep doing stupid things over and over and over again. I think we can all relate to that, right?
Oh, of course.
So what we do is use our intelligence to guide the behavior into the direction we want to go in. Without guiding it properly, it's going to go in the only direction it's ever known. Yet, in its defense, there's always a positive intent behind everything. Let's say, well, I'll use myself as an example. I smoked cigarettes for 20, 25 years. I knew in my intelligence it was a stupid, unhealthy thing to do. Hello, I'd heard. But what kept pulling me down into the negative behavior, and I thought I just didn't have enough willpower, but that wasn't the case. What was really going on behind the scenes was there was a positive intent behind the negative behavior, and that 88% kept pulling me there. In my case, the positive intent to smoking was, well, who taught me how to smoke? Well, a really hot guy when I was a teenager taught me how to smoke when he was teaching me how to make out. So I plugged into the belief that cigarettes make me sexy and attractive to cute guys. That's not a fact. That's a belief.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where all behavior comes from. There's belief behind the behavior, the positive intent. Well, there's nothing wrong with wanting to be sexy and attractive to cute guys. Well, there's lots of ways to do that without poisoning your body.
Absolutely true.
So that's what we do in therapy. We blend together. We find a healthier way to get that underlying need met. I mean, anybody who uses drugs, they don't go out and do drugs to deliberately destroy their bodies. They're trying to numb out to pain.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's lots of ways to numb out to pain in an intelligent way without damaging your body.
You have some phenomenal stories in your book, and I know many times with my programming I'll tell people stories about how one person can make a difference.
Oh.
And to me it is so meaningful because it takes us out of the paradigm that we cannot do anything to make this world a better place, which is not true. It's not all in the hands of the politicians, thank you very much.
No.
And your very first story in your book is about Becky Douglas. And I'm going to read the quote that you have. The things I was concerned about before I realized were really ridiculous. My problems, my outlook, and perspective have changed. I don't see things the way I once did. How can anyone see things the same way after what I've seen? Now, there's a movie that's been put out, and I'm looking forward to the time when I can see it, called Breaking the Curse. Tell us Becky's story. First, how did you come in contact? Let me ask a question before we get into Becky's story. You interviewed so many different people.
Yeah.
Nancy, how did you make contact with them, and what was it that made them feel comfortable enough to talk to you?
Well, there's a great story behind every story in the book, how I found them, and I collected a lot of them, and then I weeded them out and called them into the most powerful and diverse stories I could find. And it took a couple of years to find all of these and you know, yeah, make them as diverse as possible. Becky's I found, and interestingly, we're both from Georgia, but I never knew her growing up. My father saw an article about her in the newspaper and sent it to me, and of course I immediately contacted the journalist, and he gave me all her information, and voila. Becky's story, just so listeners know, is incredible. It's why I led the book with hers. She is a suburban housewife with 9 kids, and sadly, one of her children committed suicide in college. And when Becky and her husband went to clean out the girl's things, they discovered she had been giving money to this orphanage in India, of all places, for years. And that was fine. They were actually quite wealthy. That wasn't an issue. But Becky was just kind of flummoxed, and she just felt drawn to India to see what her daughter's attraction to that was. So she went over there, and cut to the chase, Becky ended up setting up a nonprofit organization for the children of the leprosy affected. She was so moved and really had no idea that leprosy still existed, and neither did I, frankly. Mm-hmm. I thought it went out with the Bible. I thought it was like polio, something they cured long ago. But no, it is still alive, sadly. And, of course, when somebody has leprosy, their limbs begin atrophying. They lose their limbs and their ability to work, to cook, to take care of their kids. So there's all of these kids that are displaced, and their needs aren't being met, to say the least. So now Becky has homes, an organization called Rising Star, taking care of the children of the leprosy affected.
And what's so wonderful is that leprosy has a genetic factor to it.
Right.
And they knew that the children, and India is one of the few places in the world where this still is a very, very significant disease.
Right.
And what I was so impressed with was Becky's openness to be receptive to some of the people who had a lot of wisdom. And there was a former UN representative and daughter of the former president of India, and her name is Padma Venkatraman. And she had told Becky, giving money to the poor is part of the problem. They have to learn how to sustain themselves.
Right.
They have to know how to work. So the two of them put something together so that those people that had leprosy would be able to get work, because if you take the paradigms that are over there, the cultural paradigms, they were outcasts. Nobody wanted anything to do with them. Well, that's the way it's been about leprosy. They used to put them on islands, you know, and there's just all kinds of hideous stories because they didn't know what caused this horrific disease.
And they thought it was contagious.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, it was. You know, it is contagious to a degree, dependent on how you're exposed. So they made them outcasts. And here you have this situation where in our modern world, two women come together and put together this program so that these leprosy colonies can become self-sufficient communities. And it's amazing what they have been able to do. And there's a movie, a PBS documentary, called Breaking the Curse. I've not had the fortune of being able to see it, but I'm looking forward to being able to see it sometime. And I just thought, what an incredible story that came about all because of the death of a child, finding something in that child's room, and then following that lead, if you will, and her whole life being transformed.
Exactly. You never know, you know, what life could deliver to you. And she talked about making lemonade out of lemons. I mean, but it really gave meaning to her daughter's life and death.
And that's something that she can really have a great sense of pride in, because there will be those that are going to be able to carry this on. She's leaving a tremendous, tremendous legacy.
Oh, of course.
Now, you have another person, Shelley Campbell, and I love the title of this, of the book chapter. It says, sometimes you have to ask God for a sign, and then there's the quote by Woody Allen, if only God would give me a clear sign, like making a large deposit in my name at a Swiss bank. And I loved that. I thought, gee, how many people hearing that would say, yo, clued me in.
Well, Shelley's story is fabulous. She is actually a friend of mine. I took her course. She's got a book out that I would highly recommend to anyone. It's called The Wealthy Spirit, and it's a page-a-day affirmation. There's a charming anecdote, quote, affirmation. You read one page a day, so it's 365 pages, and each one is so dynamic, and she gets down and dirty and raw with all her own dirty laundry. And she teaches a financial stress reduction course, and this book is all about reducing your financial stress, too. It's an increasing your wealthy spirit. So Shelley's story is, you know, she's got all this financial knowledge now, but she filed bankruptcy a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
She was a bookkeeper, and one of her biggest clients pulled the rug out from under and went with somebody else, and it just devastated her business. And one thing led to another. She had to file bankruptcy. She felt like the biggest idiot here. I'm a financial pro, a bookkeeper, and I'm filing bankruptcy. So, of course, she went through all that shame and blame and all of that, and ended up teaching you know, safeguards on how you can create wealth by starting with a wealthy spirit, and that's a generous spirit. It's not just about making money and hoarding it. It's all about giving and receiving and having that wealthy spirit. And so she has certainly come full circle. It's a beautiful book.
Strength is something that we all need. I don't know of anyone that doesn't.
Yeah.
And Vicki Strogan is a person that you talked about. She says, success is how high you bounce after you hit rock bottom.
And she has bounced high. And let me tell you, she started out at rock bottom, went down even further, and then has jumped up even higher. I met Vicki Strogan at the parole board because while I work with people just being released from prison and jail, and I met her there. She spoke so dynamically. She was there offering services for people who were coming out of prison and jail on drug-related charges.
Mm-hmm.
That was her background. She was raised with nothing, every disadvantage in the world, south side of L.A., and she's just naturally so damn smart.
Mm-hmm.
No wonder she landed on her feet. She always knew she wanted something more. But she, unfortunately, got hooked on crack and started selling it, and she was in jail herself.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it was not too fun, and she swore she would never go back. So she got out. She was clean and sober, of course, and started working as a telemarketer back when that was all the rage. And, again, she's so smart. She was a natural salesperson. She was the top of her field. She started making money, saving it, and talk about having a wealthy spirit and knowing how to manage money. Oh, my God. Within 3 years, this woman, on a telemarketer salary, saved enough money to buy a house in Los Angeles, lived in it, bought another one, flipped that, lived in that, bought another one, flipped that, et cetera, et cetera. Now she is a real estate investor. This is all she does. And she has a couple of her homes that are set up for halfway houses, again, for people coming out of prison and jail who want to get on their feet, get their kids back again. And it's her way of giving back to the community.
Mm-hmm.
An amazing woman.
Just amazing.
I know.
You also have Pat Sullivan here.
Yeah.
She says, dare to dream, to speak the language of your heart, to shape its longings into clear visions with solid goals and objectives. And I had to chuckle when I read her story because she said, working for lawyers taught me to serve someone I dislike, at least as well as someone I like very much. Taught me that meaningful work doesn't depend on job description, but on giving each task my best and on using all work to learn about myself and to serve others. What an attitude.
Oh, she's such an angel. And that's a really important element to focus on. Thank you so much for bringing that up now, Donna, because a lot of people right now are going through changes that they
mm-hmm.
don't really want. They're having to settle for jobs that maybe are not ideal for them just because of the financial crisis. So what you can do to make that more pleasant as you're redefining or reinventing yourself, and assuming this is just a temporary thing until you can get into another direction, is to focus on what you can learn in that position, even though you don't like the company or your boss. Hone in on what you do like. It may be just one tiny aspect of the job, but that once you're steeped in the gratitude for that, and you can use that as kind of a pivot in your transferable skills to creating something new. That's all good information to have about yourself.
Mm-hmm. I think so. You even have a most intriguing story, and the man is called John Doe.
Yeah.
And I thought, boy, this is something that's not expected in a book. But this man turned his life around and is helping others who were like he was,
mm-hmm.
and that was a pedophile. Now, that word would strike daggers in the hearts and minds of many people. They go, what in the world? Why would you even put somebody like that in your book?
Because if someone like that can change, we all can change.
Mm-hmm.
He actually wanted to publish it under his real name, and I thought just due to the circumstances, the last thing I wanted to do was put him in any danger. So I chose to call him John Doe.
Mm-hmm.
But I work with sex offenders myself. I work with victims of child sexual abuse, and I also work with perpetrators because it is my belief that if you treat the abuser, that is the best way to help victims. Think about it.
Mm-hmm.
If we give them proper treatment, there's going to be less victims to treat. So we have to get off, and believe me, I'm not defending their behavior at all. I'm a victim of child sexual abuse myself. So I know the power of acceptance, compassion, and proper treatment for sex offenders. Had somebody offered that to me when I was going through my abuse, the possibility that my offender was remorseful and could apologize to me and have this restorative therapy, it would have saved me years and years of anger and heartache and a lot of other negative behaviors. So I can tell you as a professional, as a survivor, and somebody who treats sex offenders, believe me, there is completely the possibility that they can change. We have got to, not to get on my soapbox, but we really do have to stop the blame and shame cycle and stop judging them and seeing that they've got an issue that needs treatment like any other. Yes, it seems to be nastier and more heinous because it's children. I get that. But the shame and judging them and maligning them is not a way to help heal. And this story is why I had to put it in the book, because he's been offense-free for 24 years because mm-hmm. he did have proper treatment. And we've got to expand that and see that that is possible for many, you know, for large numbers of perpetrators. He should not be the exception. He should be the rule.
Dr. Irwin is a man that you have featured in your book, and the statement he says is that he has self-help tips when life blindsides you. And there are so many people out there today that feel like, due to businesses shutting down, cutting back, they've been blindsided. All of their security perhaps has gone away because of the greed of individuals within certain corporate structures.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been a real shake-up and wake-up for a lot of people. And I really liked the very first sentence. It said, give yourself full permission to freak out.
Well, of course. I mean, I've been through many changes, and I wrote those self-help tips in here just to kind of sprinkle them between the stories so people would get a therapist's overview of some of the common things I've seen in the clinic, and
mm-hmm.
I see out there doing speeches. And yeah, you can't deny that it is something difficult to go through. You can't just put a Band-Aid over it, and we can't be Pollyanna and just think positively, although that's important. But the first step in any wound is to drain all the toxins out of the wound. Then you clean it, cover it, and let it heal. But you have to get in touch and feel entitled to feel the way you feel as long as you need to feel it. Now, if you get stuck in that victim mode for a while, that's another issue. But
mm-hmm.
it's perfectly natural to freak out if you get laid off or fired or dumped or diagnosed with an illness.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely freak out. Grieve. Be angry and all of that.
But also realize that it takes action, and that's something that you bring out in your suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
You bring out those points that enable a person to take a positioning of self-awareness, mindfulness,
mm-hmm.
and don't just slouch around in a house coat all day long.
Right.
And get up, get dressed, get prepared, go out, do something, even if it's just walking the dog or the cat or somebody's weasel, whatever it is. Just get out there and start, you know, moving and doing what you need to do for yourself. Some wonderful, wonderful suggestions that
well,
you go
thank
on.
You. Yeah, because it can be traumatizing when you go through this. And the first thing to do when you experience any trauma is to, well, of course, intervene and express your feelings and be heard and let and release all of that. And then you want to normalize as quickly as possible, meaning get back in your routine. If you've been fired, don't just, sleep all day. I mean, it's okay for a couple of days, but then pick a date, start getting up at your normal time, even putting on a business suit or a business dress while you're sending out your resume, just so you're sending the cues to your whole body that, yes, I'm a working professional.
Mm-hmm.
This is just temporary.
You have Thomas Boker, M.D.,
Tom
Ph.D.
Boker, yeah.
He is a fascinating man, and
brilliant.
He said it's from critic to medic. What's his story?
He was a Ph.D., in theater. He was a theater critic for a journal for years, and it struck him at a certain point, he was just bored. He was tired of doing that. And he was like, you know what? He went through this midlife awakening, and it hit him that all his life he'd wanted to be a medical doctor. So he went back. He did his makeup coursework, you know, meaning finishing the bachelor, all the science programs, and then got accepted to med school and is now a psychiatrist. So he went from a PhD to an MD after age 40. And he was so funny. He said all of my peers in med school were like half my age.
Mm-hmm.
He was in his early 40s. They were all like 22, 23. But they were great. They were very impressed with him.
Well, of course. And then they're looking at him and saying, gee, aren't you supposed to be sitting comfortably somewhere and not having to worry about this? You're an old man.
Exactly.
You know, 40 to a 20-year-old, it's like it's an antique. That's what every generation, they always feel about that. The same way. But you go on to, you know, I look at that and I think, isn't it marvelous we live in a world today that enables us, no matter what our age is. I mean, I knew a grandmother that finally graduated from high school. She was in her 90s.
I love that.
And so here you go and you're moving on. It's like, who cares when you go to school? Go to school. It doesn't care what your age is.
Exactly.
If they start getting to that point, we need to throw those schools out.
Exactly.
Because education is something that is an ongoing process, and those people that buy into the concept, young, middle age, or old, that, gee, you only need so much and that'll do it, get with it. Because
yeah.
I don't care how you get it. It's got to be there for you. You need to be aware that there's so much more in the world to experience. And that's what Emmanuel Coleman found out. I loved his story. And what he ended up doing was phenomenal. This guy really went into a serious depression.
Yeah. And then he moved to North Dakota and bought an old vintage theater and refurbished it. And it's flourishing now. They not only screen new movies, but they also have live performances there. So it's a live theater as well as a movie theater. The Bijou, out in the middle of nowhere, in near Bismarck, North Dakota.
Out in the middle of Plain country. That's Plain country.
Exactly.
No mountains. You don't see mountains. You just see wide open spaces.
Exactly.
And here we have this theater that he restored and has brought to life and has brought a whole sense of community into the environment that it's in. It's marvelous.
I know.
Dr. Nancy Irwin has been my guest. If you want to have a book in your library that is going to make you feel good, that's going to inspire you about people from all walks of life, from all economic levels, then her book, U-Turn, Changing Direction in Midlife, should be in your library. And I don't care what your age is.
Exactly.
If you're in midlife, older, this can be very inspirational. But if you're a young person, you need to think about it, too, because those of you who are younger are going to actually go through more changes in your careers and your life pattern than your moms and dads have gone through, your grandpas and grandmas. I mean, when you look back at history just 50 years past, you're going to say, holy Moses, what were those people thinking of? So just be aware that when you're younger, it doesn't mean you're exempt from change. It is not the case at all. Dr. Irwin, you have two websites. One is Dr. Nancy Irwin, and that's Dr. Nancy Irwin. And then you have another one just for the book, Make a U-Turn, and that's make a and then youturn.com.
And there's a dash between the U-Turn.
Oh, okay.
If you don't put the dash in there, it'll go to a used tire store in New Jersey.
Oh, we don't want that. Okay, so it's make a U-Turn. Make a U-Turn. You don't want to end up in New Jersey.
No, you don't.
With a car dealer.
That'd be a whole different kind of U-Turn.
That's right. That's not what you want. So, Nancy, is there anything you'd like to leave my audience with in 30 seconds?
Well, he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy.
Very, very rich, vibrant words to close this out with. Dr. Nancy Irwin, thank you so much for being my guest today.
My pleasure, Donna. Thank you.
Her book, U-Turn, Changing Direction in Midlife. Great for that library when you need some inspiration. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right, Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are open. If you'd like to give me a buzz, I would be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here is the toll-free number to call into, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Now, that's worldwide. No matter where you are, you're going to be able to get through to chat with me. Remember, all I need is your first name or your initial. Then let me tell you what I perceive, and I always enjoy knowing where you're calling in from. After that, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. So again, 888-815-9756. Now, I do want to remind you that on Tuesday, I'm going to be on Monique Chapman's radio show. AchieveRadio.com is where you would go to listen to it. We have changed the program hours. It's going to be from 5 until 6 Pacific time. And I'll be live on air with Monique. So I look forward to doing that. And again, you go to AchieveRadio.com. You can also go to Monique Chapman's website, which is WalkingWithSpirit.com. And you'll find all kinds of information there. She's a delightful woman, and I really appreciate her inviting me to be a guest on her show. Speaking of guests, we've got a dynamic lineup next week. We're going to be talking about Cosmic Connections, Message for a Better World. Carol Lynn is going to be my guest on Monday. And then if you think some laws are wacky, you haven't heard half of it. We're going to be talking with Jeff Isaac about the wacky world of laws. These are laws that are actually on the books still. You wonder why they haven't been taken off. They are so ridiculous. But it's a lot of fun to read about them, but I still think they should be removed. Then we're going to have an open mic hour on Wednesday, and that means through the entire show, you will be able to call in at any time during the hour and chat with me if you so desire. Then animals are going to be our feature on Thursday of next week. We're going to be talking with Linda and Alan Anderson. They are wonderful people, very much involved with the care and treatment of animals, and they've come out with a book called Angel Animals. It's just delightful. And then Pauline Will, a week from today, we're going to be talking about easy reflexology, and she is in England, and we will be talking to her. She is acknowledged as being very, very much the expert with this, and her book is super, super easy to use. So all of that is going to be coming up on the Donna Sebo Show next week. So tell your friends and be sure to make a note of it. Don't forget, you can always go in and find out who's coming in as a guest by going into the web page on bbsradio.com, tap on the Donna Sebo Show, and it'll show you the schedule. I type that out every month so that you will have that information available. I wanted to share some information with you today regarding drugs. And we all know that the pharmaceutical business is a huge business. But these numbers were presented to me, and I just said, this is phenomenal. When you're talking about dollars, the drug companies are really
making it big time. Now, sales of brand names pharmaceuticals in the United States in 2008. Now, this is according to the Generic Pharmaceutical Association's industry report. So this is public information. The amount is $228.5 billion. $228.5 billion in 2008. And the percentage of prescriptions dispensed in the United States for generic drugs, generics account for 16% of total prescription spending. So the percentage is 69, of prescriptions dispensed, 69% of all prescriptions dispensed are generic drugs, and they account for 16% of total prescription spending. Now, 10 to 15 years is what it takes to develop a new drug, and that is according to the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America. There's a 2007 study that estimates the cost to develop a new medicine is at $1.3 billion. Now, they were only able to give that number in accordance with the value of the dollar in 2005, so you can add a few more dollars to that. So that is what the cost is. Now, there's only 21 brand new novel drugs. These are new molecular entities that have been approved by the FDA Center for Drug Evaluation and Research in 2008. 16 were approved in 2007, a year when 2,742 new drug compounds were under development in the United States. Those are amazing numbers. Now, this was the number that I found equally interesting, and I remember watching a program, a Bill Moyers program, where a person interviewed said that for every political person in the Washington, D.C. area, there were two pharmaceutical lobbyists for each one. The average amount spent yearly on marketing and administration by 10 major pharmaceutical firms from 1996 through 2005, now this is according to a report from the University of Quebec at Montreal, was $73.9 billion. That's a lot of money. $73.9 billion. Now, during this same time frame, 96 through 2005, the drug makers spent an average of $28.8 billion annually on research and development, while direct-to-consumer advertising more than tripled. And I was talking, if you don't think that that has an influence on people, I was talking with some physicians recently. Each of the doctors said that as soon as something comes out on television and it's advertised, people will come into their offices and say, I want that, without understanding or trying to research anything about it. They just assume that what the television is presenting to them is fact. And a lot of doctors are very, very upset over that. They're not happy with that at all. Also, the average number of retail prescriptions per capita in the United States in 2007, now this was done by the Kaiser Family Foundation, and it's up 8.9 from a decade earlier, it's 12.6 prescriptions, 12.6. And then 46 million Americans whose drinking water supplies are known to contain at least trace amounts of pharmaceuticals, 46 million of us here in America are aware that there are trace amounts of pharmaceuticals in the water that we drink. And this was an Associated Press release that came out in 2008. Germany was one of the first countries that, when they did evaluations on their water, were astonished at the amount of narcotics that was in the drinking water that people were taking in. And there has been a great deal of concern. It was brought to my attention just in a conversation with someone that we're not aware, depending on what the processing system for the water might be in wherever you are living, they may or may not have a purification process, but a lot of these drugs that maybe people will dump in toilets or they dump down the drains, that goes into the water table, and they may not be able to remove it. They don't have a filtering system to remove those substances. So if any of you listening are aware of any changes or things that have gone on in your area that maybe need to be passed along, if there's something special in the filtering system of the water that takes that out, that's great. But I think it was in the early 90s, I was told by a nurse when I was visiting back in Virginia that it was against the law in that state to put any kind of narcotics into the water system. See, people don't realize everything they put down into that toilet, any chemicals they put in, is going to go out into the water table. And it's just a reality. We're finding out about more and more of these things as time goes by. It's quite fascinating. Donna Sebo, give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756 if you would like to chat with me. By the way, they have found that Mayan history, well, we can add an extra 1,000 years to it. There are some archaeologists who have uncovered two massive, massive carved stucco panels in the Mirador Basin of Guatemala's northern rainforest. They say, to the best of their knowledge, it's the earliest known representation of the Mayan creation myth, and I've got a photo of it in front of me, and it's just exquisitely done. Absolutely. Just marvelous. And they say it's, you know, surpassing any other artifacts that have been found by a good 1,000 years. Now, these are panels. They're 26 feet long, 20 feet high, and there's images of monsters, gods, swimming heroes. They believe that it dates to 300 B.C. Now, what was this for? Where did these panels come from? Well, they formed the sides of a channel that carried rainwater into a complex system of stepped pools. And they stored the water for drinking and for agriculture. And I think it is just fascinating when we are able to discover that these so-called cultures that we've labeled many times as primitive cultures were very, very sophisticated in a lot of the things that they did. I mean, in the Andes, they have found agricultural systems that were so effective that even at those high mountain elevations, they were able to keep foods and their water systems flowing. They understood the principles of being able to keep areas warm and water flowing. It's just amazing what these people knew, and it's so nice that we're finally catching up and discovering things because people have a chance to go out and to check them out. Now, Richard Hansen is with the Idaho State University. He's an archaeologist, and he's been very much involved in the ongoing excavation. And they said it's very much a scene. When he looked at these panels, he said they're from the Popol Vuh, a text of the Mayan myth that was first recorded in the 16th century. And they describe what this is all about. But there are people that say, oh, this is not true. You know, this document you're referring to is just not going to be the real thing. However, their discovery of these panels are really causing a lot of enthusiasm for these old stories about the Mayan culture and for this document that has been so very much maligned by different groups. Said, we're going to be going a lot further back in our history regarding the Mayan people. Exciting, I think. Just shows us that we never know it all, and we're always going to have to be open and receptive for new things. Because as you explore, you find out many, many things that maybe you didn't even know existed because you're going into a different paradigm. It's fascinating stuff. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. Give me a call when we come back from that break if you would like to have me use my intuitive skills to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Donna Sebo here. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna, and give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. That is our toll-free worldwide number. I want to thank those of you that have been sending me emails. I've been getting some real good material. In fact, I'm going to be sharing a couple of things with you. One of them is a story from a mom, and the other one is from Gary. And he said, I thought you might enjoy this. A man was driving when a traffic camera flashed. He thought his picture was being taken for exceeding the speed limit, even though he knew he was not speeding. Now, just to be sure, he went around the block and he passed the same spot, driving even more slowly, but again the camera flashed. Now, this man thought this was quite funny, so he slowed down even further as he drove past the area, but the traffic camera flashed yet again. He did this a fourth time, same result. He did it a fifth time. He was laughing really hard when the camera flashed as he rolled past at a snail's pace. 2 weeks later, he got 5 traffic fine letters in the mail for driving without a seatbelt. Makes you wonder sometimes about people. So be aware, they may be flashing that light at you if you don't have a seatbelt on. Also, I got a wonderful, wonderful story from a mom. Her name is Nicole, and she said, on Saturday mornings, my family and I stay in bed just a little bit longer than usual. She has 2 boys, and they'll crawl into bed with her and her husband, and they usually watch music videos all together as a family, just cuddled up in the bedroom. Now, there was a song that came on one Saturday morning that was called If This Was Your Last Day. And Nicole said she really liked the lyrics and thought it posed an interesting question. So she turned to her husband and asked him what he would do if it was his last day. And her husband thought for a while and then said he'd probably lay in bed all day just as we were doing right now. And he said surrounded by all of his favorite people just enjoying the time together.
Well, she turned to her 8-year-old and asked him what he'd do, and he said he'd go to Canada's Wonderland and go on all the rides. She said, I then focused my attention on my other son, who's 6 years old, and I asked him the same question. And he looked her straight in the eye, very seriously, and asked his mom, is this my last day to live? And so she said, yep. He then answered the question very, very seriously and said, I'd go to the hospital. And she said, my husband and I just started laughing. We thought the answer was just really, really funny. However, she said, she had thought about it after, you know, the family got up and they were busy doing things. And she said, I couldn't shake his response away from my awareness. And she realized that her 6-year-old son really had done some very careful thinking. She said he always likes to think outside of the box, and he does not accept a situation or assume something just because it's posed to him. She said, in my young son's mind, there was no reason why it should be his last day, and he was going to find a way to ensure that it wasn't. She said it took a split second for him to realize that he had the capacity to take action to make sure that it wouldn't be his last day. And not only that, but he was going to be responsible and make sure the action was in place to ensure that it wasn't his last day. He wasn't ready to go. And upon reflecting on her son's remarks to the question that she gave him, she said, my son has taught me that if you want to live, then find a way to do it. Don't give up, don't settle, and don't just accept things for what they seem to be. Don't assume and accept a situation just because it's presented to you as such. Rather, make that situation your own, take responsibility for it, and if necessary, decide to change it. She said, my 6-year-old did. She said, I really think he's the smartest kid in the whole world. What do you think? She said, not that I'm biased or anything. Well, Nicole, I really enjoyed the story, and I hope that my listeners did too. But I think the point is a very good one. How often are we told this is the fact, or these are the facts? And we don't realize that there may be options to work with. I think of someone that just had a situation where they and their family were going to be out on their street. And I get an email from them, and I've been totally unaware of the circumstances they have been going through. And I said, this is ridiculous. This should not be happening. I get on the phone, start making phone calls to different people, and I end up finding out about a company that helps individuals with their situations. Now, I didn't have the knowledge of it, but without asking the questions to see if there might be some other answers, I wouldn't have even known that. Now I have a resource that I can share with people, and I already have with some people, that there are options. Foreclosures and other things like this, there are ways of working with them. But if you buy in to what someone says, you're stuck. And that was a hard lesson for me to learn many, many years ago, and sometimes I have to remind myself of that. But that's why it's good to ask questions and to keep knocking on doors and looking for other options. It's amazing how many choices and opportunities we have available for ourselves, but we're just unaware of it. And so many of us have been taught not to ask questions, not to make inquiries, not to be curious. Don't rock the boat. That's just the way things are. Fiddle-dee-dee. Don't buy into it. Rock the boat. Find out what's out there. There is a lot of stuff in this world that we just need to pass on to other people so we can empower ourselves and not feel like victims. Victims don't go very far. You want to empower yourself so that you're not going to be in that victim mentality. It's very important, and it creates innovation. This is Donna Sebo. I know that we're out of time. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your life. You can make a UE in your life if you want to, just like Dr. Nancy Irwin was talking about earlier in the show today. It's up to you. You're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You're the boss in your own space. God bless. Enjoy it. Have a fabulous, fabulous weekend wherever you are. We'll be back here on Monday, same time, same place. This is Donna Sebo. Have a fabulous weekend. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.